In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's dig into the Jags a little bit here. By the way, Seth and I are in on Friday this week. So this is not Seth and I today getting our last word in on the Texans and Jags before Texans countdown at 9 a.m. on Sunday. We are here for you. The store is open on Friday. We are here for you on Friday this week.
By the way, I know some of you are all concerned about my recent spate of health curiosities. I think we're good.
Oh, yeah?
I think we're good. Yeah.
Okay.
Vasovagal syncope, Sean. The reason that I've passed out several times over the last couple weeks and what have you. Long story short, I've made great progress in reducing my blood pressure over the past year.
A little too much, maybe.
Turns out my body is like, hey, bro, what? WTF? Yeah, you spent 49 years of your life being borderline high blood pressure, and all of a sudden we're trying to operate like with a lower PSI here.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay, good.
So my solution is to eat more salt and get more angry.
There you go.
So thank you, Bobby Sloak. You've been helping in that regard.
Bobby Sloak is a lifesaver. He saved Seth's life. Yeah.
I'm like fluoride in the water, my blood pressure is. It's got to be the ideal amount versus, you know, like right now I'm at the, it's a little, except it's unlike fluoride, it's too low.
Yeah.
It's too low.
Oh, good,
it's
man.
It isn't too low. I think my body just has to adjust to it.
Okay, I'm glad you sounds like you got some answers then. I'm glad.
I think so, yeah. I've gotten all the tests done and everything. I didn't want to alarm anybody, but I've had a spate of tests over the last couple weeks that I feel pretty good about. I'm not going brain dead. I don't have a heart issue or anything. I genuinely do have to put more electrolytes in my diet.
Okay, good. I'm just glad you're getting answers on it. I've been concerned about you, just so you know. I know a little bit more than everybody else does. So like I'm glad to hear that things are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, so you can stop sending me your suggestions that I need to eat more elderberries or whatever. I'm fine.
Talking to me or the audience on that
the
one?
Audience,
because I've been
audience,
pounding
yeah.
you about these elderberries all
I've
the
had,
time.
I've had 2,900 homespun remedies sent my way to how to avoid getting sick so much. I haven't been sick that much.
Right.
I've just been passing out and hitting my head, okay?
Have they given you any solutions on how to not get hit by a garage door gate?
I blame that on Bobby Sloak. I think I may have been concussed already when I actually got hit by the barrier arm, the garage barrier arm exit. Because I was a little confused to begin with, and I got hit in the head by a barrier arm.
Just what you need.
And I ended up even more confused.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, so the Jags this weekend, Sunday noon kick here on Sports Radio 610, 9 a.m. Seth and I've got you for Texans countdown. Your analysis or your preview in the Titans game last week, and it all came to fruition, but big litmus test for the Texans offensive line. It's a 2-8 football team, but here's the things they do well, and my God, they match up very poorly they match up from a Texans perspective. It's not good. You know, they match up with the area that the Texans are most deficient in right now.
Yeah.
Do the Jags, in your first peek into the Jags, is there any of that dynamic going on with this matchup against the 2-9
Brian Thomas.
Team? Yeah,
Brian Thomas, the receiver. I think like he's got some nastiness in him, you know. And obviously that's tied to Trevor Lawrence and how he performs. So kind of like with Will Levis last week, obviously Trevor Lawrence has more stretches of really good play in his career than Will Levis does, but you know he's capable of good things, just not as consistently as people would like. But the ability of the the ability of the Jaguars, just like the Titans, to potentially hit the Texans with deep shots when the safety play is inadequate or what have you. Yeah, that's a big deal this week. Yeah. Brian Thomas could be the one that on Friday we're like, I can't believe they did it again. I can't believe they did it again.
Right. Christian Kirk is out for the season, as is Gabe Davis. So they're not deep at receiver right now. Yeah. Brian Thomas is clearly their number one target. And it's still up in the air as to whether or not Trevor Lawrence plays. He practiced on Monday. They were off yesterday. Here's Doug Peterson, coach of the Jags, earlier this week on Trevor Lawrence's status.
Trevor's going to practice today, and then we'll see where it's at from there.
Is it just based on how much he's able to go throughout the week?
Yeah, it'll just be a toleration thing with him, yeah.
Are you comfortable waiting until Friday or game time to decide?
Well, we'll find out today. We'll see where Trevor's at today. You know, then he's got tomorrow off, come in and get treatment, and, you know, see where he's at on Wednesday, how he feels. He's feeling better today, you know, so that's positive.
The Jags are, they were 8-3 last season, midway through the season, after beating the Texans here in week 12. Since then, they are 3-14. The Jags are. They are. I mean, that is a full 17 game season of first overall pick level play that the Jags have had since beating the Texans on the game where Matt Amendola boinked that 58-yard field goal that would have tied the game off the crossbar. They are 3-14, and yet with the way the Texans are playing right now, I'm nervous about everybody that they play.
Yeah,
whether it's Trevor Lawrence or Mac Jones, I don't even care who's playing quarterback. Mac Jones makes me less nervous, but I can't trust the Texans right now.
The other thing I would say, if you look for strengths on the Texans team or on the Jaguars roster,
yeah,
I think their front seven is a pretty solid front seven.
It's good.
Their best, you know, Hines Allen is their best defensive end and probably their best player in the front seven. I don't worry as much about edge rushers. In pass protection, especially, the Texans' offensive tackles have been just fine. The run blocking is actually improved in some regards from the offensive tackles. So I'm not overly worried about that. The Texans, in looking for areas where there has been some progress, I think as an offensive line, they've done a more capable job of picking up blitzes, et cetera. So it's the one-on-one individual matchups between defensive tackles and the interior offensive line that scares me the most in any given week. And this isn't the week where that's a huge scare.
Yeah.
So I think we might come out of this game perhaps with a false hope that, oh, wow, it looks like the offensive line has figured some things out. But it's more so just that they weren't tested the way they were versus the Titans.
I'll take it. Going into the bye week, yeah. I'll take it. Like, if it's false hope, give me 2 weeks of false hope. It beats whatever we've been feeling over the last 6 weeks. You know?
What if it's a false hope, though, that prevents them
from making a change? You and I are thinking the exact same thing at the exact same time. Yeah, like, is it something that D'Amico can use as justification that we're fixing some things and it's moving in the right direction? Yeah, that's a concern. That's a concern.
Well, and not even, you know, to bounce off of something you said earlier, I think the biggest two examples that you can look for as to whether, hey, does it even make sense to make an in-season offensive coordinator change? The Lions really started their turnaround when they switched to Ben Johnson mid-season, and Josh Allen's entire career trajectory changed last year when they switched to Joe Brady to be the offensive coordinator in the middle of last season, about two-thirds of the way through the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's precedent. Recent precedent of teams that are performing very well right now that had a big turnaround when they switched up offensive coordinators in season.
I guess knowing that the biggest issue with the Texans is the interior of the offensive line, if we're using those as comparisons, the biggest issue with Buffalo, what was the biggest issue with Buffalo when they cut Ken Dorsey loose last year?
The biggest thing, the Buffalo was a dicey one because they had all these stats that showed that they were a top offense. But then when you would walk, I think a lot of it boiled down to the same things we say. Like, all right, you look good when you add up the stats in total. And mind you, the Bills looked a lot better than the Texans do right now offensively in terms of the stats. But in critical situations, yeah. You know, and can you run the ball when you need to run the ball? Are you making it harder on Josh Allen or easier? people that watch the Bills every week were screaming, no, this ain't right. It's not getting done. The stat heads were saying, yes, but look at his EPA, et cetera, et cetera. And they ended up, they just turned Josh Allen into a more professional quarterback.
Yeah.
They gave him more answers to the test.
Yeah, that's my concern is that, and I love the examples of Buffalo and the example you just gave of Detroit there. Those, to me, what applies to the Texans there is that, that it's not unprecedented that you do something like this. It's not unprecedented that it can be a shot in the arm. My concern, I guess, would be is like, I don't know, like, that's all it would be for the Texans, unless there's some drastic philosophical shift. Because that's what it was. If, as you talk through the Buffalo thing, they did start to become way less Diggs reliant and much more run heavy and spread the ball out. I mean, it's a big reason why Stephon Diggs wanted out of there, because they started spreading the ball around. So, I mean, unless a new offensive coordinator is going to come in with some shift in how they're doing things, I don't know that firing the offensive coordinator fixes Juice Scruggs, Jared Patterson, and Shaq Mason.
I guess, you know? And that, but that's where we are, where you can look at, when you look at anything, whether it's in sports, business, or otherwise, where you've got multiple things that are underperforming across the board, mm-hmm. whether it's your quarterback himself, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's your wide receiving core, it's... Yes, you can reach into that bag and pull out an issue and try to blame it all on that. The sum total of everything is that the offensive coordinator is the guy who's responsible for the execution of the plays. We hear this every week. Oh, it's execution. Oh, it's the execution. Right. The offensive coordinator is responsible for the execution.
Yes.
There's lots of factors at play there, but these guys are not doing the things you're asking them to do. Why? Why? And there, at this point in the year, you can't go back in time and change the personnel. You know, you can't, there's certain things you cannot do. You can't go back in time and do it. The one big, actually notable and significant thing you can do at this point in the season is switch out play callers. And you don't know that it's going to work, but you have to recognize where you are. This is not a fluke at this point. This is not just a rough stretch. They've been one of the worst offenses in the league.
Yeah.
Over the past several weeks.
Yep.
What's the stretch now? Is it going back 6 or 7 weeks that CJ's stats are so abysmally low?
Yeah, 6.
In the last 6 weeks.
Going back to the New England week 6 was the last time CJ had a good game.
So you don't know that it's going to definitively make a difference, but you're already the worst in the league.
Yeah.
Are you worried that you're going to get worse?
Yeah.
If it's Gerard Johnson, if it's Bill Lazor, if it's Ben McDaniels, I don't know who they've got tabbed as the in-house replacement. But it's very unlikely you're going to get worse.
Yeah.
And I'll go back to what I said yesterday, which is, if D'Amico had inherited Bobby Slowick, let's just say if D'Amico, instead of it being the hire of a first-time head coach who hired a first-time offensive coordinator, that's the situation we're in right now. If D'Amico had inherited Bobby Slowick, what would he be thinking about Bobby Slowick right now? You know? If he detaches all loyalty and friendship and everything else from it, what about if you're the head coach of this team and you're looking at it as objectively as possible, what is Bobby Slowick doing to keep his job?
He would be, if I had to say, if you know, you're asking what would D'Amico be saying, and total guess, obviously, it would be like, I can't believe I agreed to take the job with keeping this guy around.
Right. I can't believe I had this guy forced on me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, great. You know, you'd be thinking about all the other different guys that you might replace him with.
That's right.
And that's, look, Dan Campbell said it. The most important job of the head coach is who he hires. And D'Amico was a first-time head coach. This is a mistake that perhaps he made as a first-time head coach, and yet it's maybe the toughest one to extricate yourself from. But I feel like that's where we are right now.
Well, and it might be an oversimplification, but I think there's something to first-year head coach, first-time head coach, first-time OC, first-time QB coach, really, Gerard Johnson. You know, I know Gerard's had some assistant QB jobs along the way. Like, this is the first time he's ever had the title. Quarterback's coach, rookie quarterback. I'm talking, you know, last year, rookie center, young offensive lineman. Like, that's, man, I've been involved in businesses before. The very first radio station I ever worked at in town, you know, down the street, everybody was doing their job for the first time. And ultimately, it didn't work, you know? Yeah, and I think a lot of that, you know, first-time owner of a station, first-time GM, first-time programming, first-time program director. Me and John Harris had never hosted a show before. We were the afternoon show. That was a good decision. Sure. But the inexperience shows through, and there's nowhere to lean on. You know what I mean? There's nobody right. There's nobody in that chain of command who says, "Oh yeah, I've seen this before." Like really seen, not observed it, experienced. There's a difference between observing something and experiencing something, and there's nobody in that chain from D'Amico all the way down to Juice Scruggs at center. I know he's left guard now, so we'll put Jared Patterson in there, who's really experienced this type of patch before.
Okay, so in football, there's an old center line theory, which is that your smartest people on your football team ideally are the guys who are in that center line of the football. So starting with the center, going back to the quarterback, yep. and then on the other side of the direction, your middle linebacker, your safety.
Yep.
You want those guys to be super, super heady dudes.
Yes.
And honestly, in the modern NFL, extend that to running back and pass protection.
No
makes
doubt.
A big, big difference if you got a smart dude in pass
Hell
protection.
Yes.
But then imagine, too, that the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator are standing behind those guys coaching from the end zone.
Correct.
On the offense, you have a young center behind him, a young quarterback, and directing the show is a first-time offensive coordinator with a first-time head coach at the helm. That's too much youth and inexperience.
Yeah.
That's just too much. You're not gonna paint a Picasso, right out the gate when you've got all that youth and inexperience right there, and it feels like it's all come to roost this season.
Yeah. Ironically, in year two, you know, where they've got a year under their belt, but it wasn't perfect last year either. It was encouraging last year. Text message 5 Hour Energy fan line. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. How can anyone say with a straight face that Bobby Slowick is the problem when people last year were so worried about him leaving for a head coaching job? I'm confused.
Because you're not confused. Stop being that way. Stop being passive aggressive. And honestly, it's a fair question, but you can think this through for yourself. People wondered, as did Sean and I, exactly. Okay, Bobby Slowick hasn't truly demonstrated that he's a genuinely good offensive coordinator. The reason that he was such a good hot prospect was that he had done really good things with a rookie quarterback, and that people are so desperate for offensive minds that he's going to get plucked potentially before he's really proven anything. So there's your answer for the first part. Why was there so much, you know,
interest?
I don't want to even say optimism, interest and intrigue around Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
I think, and this is 100% what you and I were saying, was he still hadn't demonstrated that he could actually put together a good rushing attack.
Right.
You know, he still hadn't demonstrated that he was genuinely a good NFL offensive coordinator. And this year, so far, he's fallen flat on his face. So it doesn't, don't play dumb with me. You're being passive aggressive, and you think you're making a smart point, but you're also just trying to be a smarmy D-bag way too early in the morning for a guy. I will thank you for helping raise my blood pressure, which
yes.
I desperately need.
Yep.
You know, so I appreciate you looking out for my health, but stop it.
This is stop it with that. This is proof you've been listening.
I'm confused.
This is proof you're listening to your doctor, Seth, about getting your blood pressure back up a little bit. You did not assume positivity, nor even just. This person's a Southern Belle in your mind. I'm confused.
I'm confused. I thought you were telling me I'm going to do a little old Venn diagram where I basically put anybody where I want.
Right.
And I'm gonna do that thing that Seth hates so much, create a fictitious Venn diagram, and like, hey, Seth, you said that Bobby Slowick should be the head coach of the Texans, and now you're saying they should fire. Well, no, I never said he should be hired as a head coach or anything else. I was optimistic about what he had done, and now he's fallen flat on his face, you know?
Yep. Someone throws in also, guys, don't forget, an O-line coach with no experience in the scheme. Bingo. I mean, it was...
Oh, yeah. Big mistake.
In retrospect, it was a very, very... And it's coming to roost now, like a very rickety foundation that they were, you know, that they built the offense on, just in terms of experience.
And honestly, to respond to that comment again. We do this with players all the time. Somebody shows promise. Hey, you're excited about them. And then, it turns out they're a dud. That's what happens. Like your initial stock report doesn't always stick and hold. Let me check on my Webvan stock this morning. Oh, okay. Oh, they're defunct. Have been for 20 years.
Yeah, guys get worse at their job or they get exposed.
But that is actually, okay, so in terms of hiring experience and what have you, kids, Webvan was a company that was going to deliver groceries back in like 1999. The internet was all the rage back then, mm-hmm. So you're going to be able to order groceries and have them delivered to you. It's a great idea. Everybody was gung-ho for it, myself included. They made a lot of mistakes. They were a bunch of guys that were just like overly ambitious, didn't know what they were doing, and it failed. And people wondered, gosh, will we ever actually have, you know, mass-scale grocery delivery? You know what Amazon did, Sean? Now that we're sitting here, it's 20 years later, and now Amazon hired a bunch of the failed executives from Webvan.
That's smart.
And they learned from their mistakes, and they changed it, and they crafted it, and it was just obviously a much better and more professional operation.
Now it's glorious. Now you get stuff right at your door in like 2 hours. It's amazing.
And I think the Texans' offensive staff right now is a little bit like Webvan. They had a lot of guys with a lot of good ideas and a lot of potential, but it's just been poorly implemented.
Yep.
They are the Webvan of NFL offenses.
Text message. So you guys saying get rid of Bobby. Kind of. I mean, right now.
Yeah,
right?
I know. I've said that. What the hell's going on here, Sean? What? You're just intentionally trolling.
No, I'm not. No.
You're just worried about me falling down again.
I'm finding the text.
Yes, I am saying at the top of my voice, get rid of Bobby Slowick. I don't understand. Where have I been ambiguous in this?
This might be a person who hasn't been listening to the show the last few days.
Well,
and they want to hear you say it. You know what I mean? Like when Tony.
I feel like it's malpractice if you're not heavily considering replacing Bobby Slowick.
Right. Like when Tony Soprano asked one of his guys to go whack somebody and he says, "You got it?" And they nod their head. Yeah. They're like, no, I need to hear you say it. Mm. Do you understand what I am saying? And they go, "Yes, Tony, I understand. I need to whack Bobby Slowick. Yes.
Speak into this funny shaped flower on my lapel.
Exactly.
And tell her, are you Seth Payne ready to fire Bobby Slowick? Yes. And I do it honestly, that part of it, I'm not even saying it with venom. I'm not saying it with anger towards Bobby Slowick or what have you. He's the wrong guy for the job right now. Yeah, they need to try something different. They've been one of the worst offenses in the league over the last 6 weeks. And other than loyalty to Bobby Slowick, I don't think there's a reason not to try somebody different or try something new. At the very least, a change in responsibilities during the bye week. I don't know what it looks like. Maybe we won't find out the actual answer. But it's broken right now. It's very, very broken.
Well, it's in the season. You know, the season is in danger. I'd say the season's in danger of slipping away. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs in all likelihood, but they're not going to do anything if this is who they are.
You had an aggressive offseason that was done. And I know you made this point yesterday. The Texans themselves were never saying Super Bowl or bust.
Right.
But they operated in the offseason in a way that they should have expected much better than this.
Yes.
You know, so it's just that part of it has not worked out.
That's absolutely right. So,
it's a rebuild and you're going to give them time. Like, no, screw that.
Well, the most important person in that building over there is C.J. Stroud. And the fact that he is at the bottom of the barrel statistically in almost every efficiency stat for quarterbacks over the last 6 weeks is inexcusable. And then look. It's not all on, you know, it's not, CJ is not 0% culpable in that. Like, he can do some things better. But, man, it is happening on Bobby Slowick's watch, as is this offensive line wretchedness on the interior. And that's the big thing to me is, like, it's affecting how CJ Stroud plays. And they're lucky it hasn't, to our knowledge at least, affected him physically. You know, our knowledge. Nick Caserio dismissed it when he was on with us a week ago when we asked him point blank, is CJ hurt? And he said, injury report, much to do about nothing. That it's impacting CJ Stroud this negatively, to me, is the biggest black mark of all of it. He's the one guy I care about more than anybody over there.
And I think, too, there's part of it. One guy I look at sometimes is Shaq Mason, because I think that Shaq Mason is not physically the same guy he used to be. He's on the backside of his career. But there's too many times where Shaq Mason looks tentative and looks maybe a little bit unsure of what he's supposed to be doing because he doesn't play with the same violence he used to play with. that's almost my canary in the coal mine, is to like, all right, I don't look, the offensive tackles are who they are. They're more finesse players than anything else. I don't like seeing Shaq Mason out there playing like a finesse player.
Right.
You know, he's pulling, and at times it looks like he doesn't even is 100% certain who he's supposed to be targeting. The one pass protection where you're pulling the guard to take the defensive end.
I saw it.
Where, man, you got to get your butt out there.
Dude.
If you want to pull that off. Athletically, you can't do the same thing, but he didn't even look like he had any urgency to it.
No.
So I don't know what the hell's going on the like. It's the Juice Scruggs is just, he's going to struggle no matter what.
Yeah.
But there's some other things on the offensive line where there's just an uncertainty about the way they operate that to me always comes back to when your veteran players look like they're uncertain. I blame coaching.
Yeah.
I just flat out do.
It's really troubling. Text message 5 hour energy fan line. Do you think CJ has the football equivalent of the yips? Offensive line is bad, so his internal clock is rushed. He's making bad decisions. I think firing the O-line coach would be better. We'll see what happens with the O-line coach. CJ with the yips is interesting because there's at least a couple of throws every game the last few weeks. I'm not even talking about the interceptions. I'm talking about like 3rd and 6, and you've got Nico for what last season would have been an easy 8 yard, you know, just run 8 yards, turn around, and CJ hits him, and CJ's throwing it at Nico's knees. There's still throws that CJ makes, several every game, where I'm like, yikes, there's only a few guys. That throw he made wasn't a completion, but that throw he made to Tank Dell on 3rd and 19, where Tank couldn't haul it in, the DB got his hand in there and poked it away, that was a rope on 3rd and 19. Like, he still makes like 5 or 6 of those every game, you know?
The one thing, too, is that I think, and I'm trying to be as honest as possible with myself when I do this, but I know on the TV copy or watching in person sometimes, there's throws that I think like, oh, that's an errant throw. That's not like CJ. Then you go back and you watch and, oh, okay, he was getting hit from the side.
Yes.
It looks way worse from the end zone copy than it did on the TV copy.
Yep.
So there's that. But there's something on his deep balls that isn't quite right.
Yeah.
I think there are times where he's not stepping into the throw when he does have time,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, it's either on CJ or it's also as part of an explanation. It's just because he doesn't feel comfortable and he doesn't trust the pass protection or what he's seeing and all of that. CJ will take responsibility for that. He's got to get better. But when I also watch some of these other teams, and, man, I was just watching when I was watching Frank Ragnow, the center for the Lions, because he's playing with a partially torn pec. So I wanted to see, okay, could Jalen Petrie do this? The technique, the operation on the offensive lines on a team like the Lions versus the Texans, it's just night and day.
And
you don't need
league.
A trained eye to see it.
No.
If you have NFL Plus, just go watch one series of the Lions and then one series of the Texans, and you'd think they're – you think one is a college team and one is an NFL team.
That's a great way to put it.
That's on the offensive line coach. That's on the individuals themselves. But just from footwork onto body posture into clarity of and focus, it's just night and day. And that's Frank Ragnow with a partially torn pec.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that raises an interesting question that I got to the Hutopia mailbag yesterday. But Hutopia, for those who don't know, I do a podcast, a Texans podcast. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it drops. Wednesday is a mailbag episode. So that baby's probably dropping sometime this morning. I recorded it last night. But it was an interesting question because, you know, people came into the season with so much hope, expectations, all of those things. And the team got off to a 6-2 start. That was, you know, if you watched every game snap to snap, all right, this team's 6-2, but it's on the, you know, largely on the back of being really good situationally at the end of games. They barely had a positive point differential, and they were 6-2 to start the season. So I had somebody ask me, when was your honeymoon is over moment for this season? Right? Because I think, by and large, Texan fans right now, there's very few Texan fans that are super optimistic. I don't think they're losing fans, but I think the fans are losing confidence in the team. And so I think you've got a fan base that, by and large, is anywhere from nervous and concerned to angry. And so there, you know, was there an inflection point, you know, where the honeymoon is over and you flipped from being hopeful and happy about the season to, okay, my Mondays suck now because of this team.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm curious what yours was, Seth, because for me it was the Jets game. you know, that it was the Jets game. It was the second half of that Jets game where you had a team on the ropes. You had a team. You had a team at halftime where the fans were chanting "sell the team" to ownership, and in the second half of that football game, you allowed their offense to literally the only time you got off the field. You didn't get off the field. They had three touchdown drives, and they were taking knees at the end. That was it in the second half. Like they didn't stop scoring touchdowns against you. And it may have had something to do with the fact that I was doing a post game show after that till 1 a.m. But that was the for me, it was the Jets. I'm curious on the 5 Hour Energy fan line. Like, what was your, if you're somebody who feels this way right now about the season, that it's taken a twist for you where you lack optimism or you're even angry about the season, where was your honeymoon is over moment?
Mine was the Jets game. It was a window of time, Sean.
Okay.
It was the Jets game followed by C.J. Stroud throwing that interception when he was targeting a wide-open Tank Dell in the end zone.
That's a good
and
one.
Where he didn't put enough on the ball. He was late to make the decision.
Against the Lions.
All of those things. Yeah. Because that felt like a culmination of, all right, you just lost to the Jets. Oh, because it was a short week and you guys didn't have energy. I don't even want to talk about that element of this team that seemingly can't handle a short week because my legs are tired. But then, yeah, the CJ just definitively not being the same guy and not making decisions the same way. And then perhaps for whatever reason, not having as much on his deep ball this year. That's the toxic twist of CJ underperforming, distrust in Bobby Slowick, the team not showing up with energy when they need to, and throw in a dollop of can't score in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like every second half is a honeymoon is over moment. Yeah,
has our confused friend responded at all?
We're getting a lot of text, so I'm not sure.
Okay,
I'm not
my
sure.
The security settings on my computer won't allow me to get into our text system.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, so apologies to my confused fella.
No worries. I'll be sure to cherry pick the ones that get you appropriately agitated. Don't worry. A lot of people saying the Jets game, too, on the honeymoon is over moment. 5 Hour Energy fan line, text message, Jets game, too. Text message, I agree, Jets started it, and how we lost to the Lions sealed it. So similar to what you were saying, Seth, window of time of week 9 and 10 sort of combo platter.
I mean, you look at the stretch of games leading into that Jets game, and, you know, oh, you got the Bills, beat the Bills. All right, hey, Patriots. That wasn't as pretty as we would have liked, but an authoritative
beat them by 20.
Victory over the Patriots.
Yeah, authoritative,
Packers,
yeah.
Packers, you're frustrated with the end-of-game management, but at the end of the day, you're on the road in Green Bay versus a very good team, and you had a shot there at the end. And then the Colts game, there were a lot of concerns. We were nervous about a bunch of things offensively, but you were just kind of uncertain about things, and then you drop a game for the second year in a row to the Jets right around the same time of year that you dropped the game to the Jets last year, and it feels like, oh, wait a second. Are we right back to square one with this team?
Yeah, and at the time they were 6-3, but it did feel that way. My honeymoon is over moment was when I learned Juice Scruggs would be the day one starter, and again when Seth went on a 10-minute on-air rant telling everyone how stupid I was.
Oh, yeah, that's that guy. I told you already, man. I've already conceded that you won that one.
Yeah,
quit trying to rub it in my face, man. If you can't, I know that guy. That guy's unreasonable, though, because he wouldn't. I had some arguments and disagreements with him that he just wasn't even listening to what I was saying. Like, he just kept bringing up all these straw man arguments. So, but I've already conceceded.
He did.
I've already conceded
times.
That one to you. So just shut your trap now.
There you go.
That guy is insufferable, man.
That guy
grinds my gears, which is good. So thank you for keeping me from passing out.
Driving his blood pressure up, which is what Seth needed.
Syncope.
According to his doctor. Seth's the first person I have ever known whose doctor told him, we need your blood pressure to increase.
It's more complicated than that, but they don't need it to increase.
Few people say in the Vikings game, that's a little early for the honey. That to me was just, hey man, Vikings are a little better than we thought they were. It was week 3, so I'm like, all right, even good teams get one of these during the year. I hate that the Texans are using theirs in week 3. Like, I hate that they're cashing their we got our asses kicked coupon in week 3, but that one wasn't as big a concern Vikings
the one
game.
About that was that the Vikings defense, and I was curious about this, you know, Brian Flores' defense was doing a lot of stuff that it's kind of like a Cliff Kingsbury offense at the beginning of the year when you don't have a lot of film on it. It's a lot. It's a lot to process, and they don't have tendencies or anything. So I was able to excuse it a little in my mind of like, man, all right, this is a class. If you caught the Vikings at the end of the year, it might have been different. But yeah, I wasn't panicking at that point. Nico wasn't there, et cetera, but it was, it was obviously a red flag.
Yeah. I'm with Seth. It was a Jets game in the interception.
Excuse me. Joe Mixon wasn't in the Vikings game.
Yeah. Joe Mixon. I'm with Seth. It was the Jets game and the interception to Tank. You're getting a lot of people agreeing with you on that. It began in Green Bay and the Jets game sealed it. This is an interesting text message. I always like it when it starts with this. Guys, let's call it the way it really is. Okay, here we go.
Okay. Tell me what the way it really is.
Tell us what it is. Here we go. This is a texter. This started last year, but we gave them a pass because they were winning. I need to know what this is. I need more specific. Like, what started last year?
There were plenty of passes given last year because it was the first year.
Right.
But again, I'll go back to you and I were never 100% sold on Bobby Slowik because we still needed to see him prove that he could actually deliver a really good offense. You know, that's where I wasn't whistling past the graveyard on that. I had grave concerns over whether they'd be able to put together an actual good rushing attack.
Mm-hmm.
And even when it's looked good this year, it's been more about Joe Mixon than the actual offensive line or the system itself. So it's one of those classic things where, look, there were warning signs, and we were monitoring those warning signs. The Texans have failed to deliver on almost every single one of those warning signs.
Yep.
That's the tough part of it. As far as, don't lump me in with the people that wanted to crown Bobby Slowik king and make him a head coach immediately. I very much like the upside of Bobby Slowik. I was very intrigued, and I was very optimistic. But he hadn't genuinely proven it to us yet.
That's right.
And this is where, to go back to our confused fella, he's failed the test. He's just flat out failed that test. I don't know what's so complicated about it.
Right.
I don't understand why it's hard to understand whether you're D'Amico Ryans or the guy who's confused about how I feel this way now. It's you get optimistic about something, and then the thing you were optimistic about turns out you shouldn't have been as optimistic, and then you change course. That's life.
Yeah, no.
Stop making it more complicated.
Right. If you're confused as to why, he was a big candidate last year, and now everybody's down on Bobby Slowik, you're somebody who, you would strike me as somebody who's surprised when you open up your app to look at the stock market. What? The Dow is down today?
It's down.
I thought it only went up.
Or just even in the case of Web Van or anything else that. Because the stock market is going to rise and fall. Individual companies are going to thrive or fail.
Right.
And, you can do the hindsight and say, I wish I would have bought Apple stock back then. The fact of the matter is that there are 10 different stocks that you could have chosen that look just like Apple that you couldn't have predicted. And that's life.
Keep texting in 713-572-4610, 5-hour energy fan line. When was your, if indeed the honeymoon is over, when was your honeymoon is over moment for the Texans? There's one thing that I am really glad with the Texans that we don't have to worry about anymore in any of these off seasons. And we'll tell you what that is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
This came out last week. The Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame, is down to its 25 semifinalists. And my immediate reaction wasn't even to look at the list. My immediate reaction was to say, I'm really glad we don't have to worry about this with Andre Johnson anymore. I'm glad we don't have to worry about bringing up the fact that Reggie Wayne had Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison and Edgerrin James, Hall of Famers themselves. Torrey Holt had Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Hall of Famers, and that Andre Johnson had not those guys.
The wide receiver log jam and kind of the multiple different ways you could slice all of that, that had the potential to be really, really annoying for multiple years if Andre hadn't gotten in. So yes, we don't have to worry about any of that.
I'm really glad we don't have to worry about that anymore. Really, really glad. It's an interesting group. I have become resigned to the fact that Eli Manning has a really good shot of getting in, just based purely on the lack of. I hate doing this with Hall of Famers because they're all phenomenal. These are 25 immortals here, but that's. I almost feel like they want to have a headliner every year, you know. And there are a ton of great players on here. If it's not Eli, I don't know who the headliner is. I'll tell you the guy who I think should be the biggest lock to make it on here, and it's probably Luke Kuechly. That guy was a first team All Pro. He retired early, right? He retired with some tread still left on the tire, but he was a first team All Pro nearly every year he played in the NFL.
I met him very, very briefly at the Super Bowl this year, and I was kind of shocked by how big he is. That's he
doesn't look big on the TV copy.
He has like and he has little glasses and he kind of just squirrely around. He never struck me, but I guess I'm getting more like that as I get older and as I get smaller. I'm like, oh, these NFL players are actually pretty big.
Well, you're smaller now, so
I will say amongst Hall of Famers. That's a pretty consistent thought I have, which is usually when you meet most people, when they meet NFL linemen, I mean, I don't know about most people, but when you meet a guy just in street clothes and he's by himself, he's not surrounded by other offensive linemen, a lot of times people are like, oh, he's not as big as I thought he'd be. Guys like J.J. Watt, Luke Kuechly, Elvin Bethea, any of these guys, Bruce Matthews, when you meet them in person, you're like, oh, this is a different type of human being.
Yeah.
This is like, these are guys, this is just like genuinely, I don't know if they're the same species as me.
Right.
They're just larger. They just got big. Like JJ, I always felt JJ could have easily been a 340-pound offensive tackle and not looked fat. You know, he's just got a bigger frame than even other really good football players.
Yeah.
So Kuechly's a little bit like that.
Kuechly, yeah. I think Kuechly should be the biggest lock. I think Eli's going to make it. I've come to grips with that. Eli, other than the two Super Bowls, is the definition of average. Like, he literally has a 500 career record. He's 117 and 117. In his career as a starting quarterback. Like, he's the definition of the middle of the road, you know?
I'm stacking him up next to Joe Flacco right now. Because Joe Flacco's the other guy who had one very notable Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
Where, man, he made some awesome plays. He also, on that Super Bowl run, checked down to a screen on 4th and 20 that ended up working out for him.
Happens.
But he also made some incredible throws that above and beyond what he had done as a regular season quarterback anywhere else in his career. And I feel like Eli is that same guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Joe Flacco, they have about an identical QB rating.
Mm-hmm.
Flacco threw fewer interceptions, but in fewer games.
Yeah.
But I think it was still a much lower interception
rate.
Very
similar players.
Pass yards per game, it's like just about the same. All of these things. And the biggest difference is that Eli had four, count them, we're talking about a quarterback here, four Pro Bowls in his entire career.
His whole career. And he played
a long
time.
No All-Pros.
Right.
Like, he was never regarded as one of the best quarterbacks in the game.
No.
While he was an active quarterback. He just had a couple of incredible throws in a couple of Super Bowls. And now, yeah, I feel like if you're going to let Eli in because of that, you got to put Justin Tuck in. Like, Justin Tuck was a better player at his position than Eli Manning was at his.
On both those teams.
But was also an awesome in the Super Bowls.
Yeah.
You know? OCU Mignola might as well get a Super Bowl because he might as well get a Hall of Fame bid. Because I think he was better at his position than Eli Manning was at his.
Quarterbacks,
so why
man.
Is the quarterback the guy that gets to make the Hall of Fame simply because of a couple of performances in Super Bowl?
It's the marquee position, you know. It's just it's quarterback league, and he's royalty, man. You know, he's a Manning. He's
Joe Flacco, way more rushing touchdowns than Eli Manning.
That's
disgusting, Eli Manning. How does Joe Flacco have 16 rushing touchdowns?
Joe Flacco is still playing. Eli Manning, broadcaster. So I think Eli's making it.
Is it unfair that, like, I'm just assuming that Joe Flacco won't be in the Hall of Fame conversation?
I don't think he belongs anywhere near the Hall of Fame conversation.
My argument against Eli was when
I don't think Eli belongs in the Hall of Fame either.
On the Manning cast, I don't know if Eli even knows where the Hall of Fame is. I played in a Hall of Fame game against Eli Manning. No, wait. Oh no, that wasn't Eli yet. Never mind. So this is the thing. I was watching the Manning cast, a clip of the Manning cast. It was the play that was called back because of Laremy Tunsil's illegal man downfield. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen a quarterback fumble through what the actual rule was on something that I thought every quarterback would know. Eli Manning looked like he was just now learning about illegal man downfield. You talk about being in command of everything. And this is why I couldn't remember. I couldn't figure out. The next day after that game, we had multiple texts of people saying, like, well, why was it illegal man downfield when the pass was behind the line of scrimmage? And I'm like, why are people saying that? And I watched this clip from Eli, and it's because Eli said it.
He was planting confusion.
It's like, well, what? But it was behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Like, yes. Like, every damn screen, Eli. What the hell are you talking about? That specifically screens when it matters the most, which are usually behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah. What the hell are you talking about, brutal. Eli? Based on that, he can't get into the Hall of Fame. I'm going to have John McClain bring that clip up when he argues
with you. I'm
him.
Curious what John thinks. And when I've talked with John about Eli, John hasn't seemed nearly as bullish on Eli, certainly being a first ballot Hall of Famer, as some do out there, you know?
I wonder, do Giants fans even look at him as a bona fide Hall of Famer?
You know what? Giants fans probably, those two Super Bowls will create a lot of delusion. They will infect your brain with a lot of delusion Super Bowl rings. I hope to find that out someday. I would gladly have C.J. Stroud be a markedly average quarterback for his entire career and deliver us two Super Bowls to Houston. Then have him, you know, throw for 5,000 yards 10 years in a row, and then the furthest we get is an AFC title game.
Hey, when was the last time we did a segment about whether or not C.J. Stroud is on pace for the Hall of Fame? He's like,
it's been a spell.
He's not anymore.
No, he's not.
I guess that's the other part of it. I know that, some people are confused or wondering, like, hey, Seth, how can you flip on Bobby Slowick this fast? The answer is simply that, for a couple reasons. One is that it's the one change you could make right now where you could go from being if it works out, if maybe the guy is already in the organization, you could stop being one of the worst offenses in the league over the last 6 weeks, which they have been. Because are you going to get any worse than that? Probably not. And if you do, who cares? But the second is that, yeah, I had high hopes for Bobby Slowick, but as we said the entire offseason, he still hadn't proven that he was genuinely a good offensive coordinator yet. Offensive coordinators have to go through that same dynamic that rookie quarterbacks do, which is, hey, they've got a year of film on you. They're going to see what you can do. And so far, Bobby Slowick, every step along the way, hasn't done a single thing to back up or justify all of that praise and optimism that he created last year. So, and look, CJ ain't going anywhere. CJ's got that upside. We know it's there. He's still exhibiting it this year. He's just not operating the same way. He's not as consistently accurate as he was. There's multiple reasons for that potentially, but at least one of them is if the entire operation around him was better, we'd have a better gauge for what CJ is doing and not doing well. But they're not helping him out in so many different facets and areas right now that I don't know. I just can't say that Bobby Slowick is the guy to figure it out for him.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thanksgiving Eve Wednesday. Keep texting in. Honeymoon is over moment for you this season with the Texans. Not saying you're out on them, but when did the mood turn for you? We're getting some good texts on that to the 5-Hour Energy fan line. We'll continue to mix those in. Seth and I tried to forecast the number of job openings that there will be at head coach in the NFL last week. I think there was one we were both counting on that, according to the owner now, might not be open. There might be an extension coming. You will not want to miss. I think you know who we're talking about. You will not want to miss this audio. That is coming up next.